Hey, this is Winfrey. This is our Monday night conference call, and we just got bumped off the line, so that's why we're a few minutes late. So those of you that are been hanging out waiting for us, thank you so much for your patience. And we're doing something different tonight, and that is we started out with the conference line simulcast with BBS, but I couldn't get back on the conference line. So now we are just on BBS, and I hope someone that's on the conference line will turn on their computer and put the audio so the people on the conference line can hear the audio. And because I'm not on the conference line. So I feel a little lonely. I'm used it's kind of neat doing this call with a conference line because I know they're there, but it's neat to have people holding light energy and saying hi, and it creates a, how can I say it, a supportive environment. And you know what? I still can feel them because I know they're there, and I'm just waiting for someone to say, okay, we've got them on. So those of you that have questions tonight, normally they just come up on the conference line, but we're going to have to do it the old-fashioned way, and that is you're going to have to call 877-489-6350, and I will be giving you that number again through this, 877-489-6350. And you know what? I don't like to call people guests because I have Carla Ruckert on, and we probably know each other for probably 1,000 lifetimes, although we don't remember what they were. But we, for those of you that are tuning in for the first time, Carla Ruckert is probably one of the most respected people who do something that's called channeling, which is be a vehicle, a human vehicle, to bring in messages from other realms. And that what we believe are from very positive sources, and she has influenced probably tens of thousands of people, particularly with her raw material and currently with her chrome material. And she has been referenced many, many, many times in my book, The Reincarnation of Ed Casey, and I am honored to have her here tonight. Carla.
Hello there. Thank you so much for that kind introduction.
So, I have a question that's always that's been in my mind for a long time. And you know what the question is?
I don't.
Do you still think Ra is an ancient astronaut?
Well, I think it's probably one true way of putting it. The trick of language is that there are so many levels you can take things on. You can take them literally. You can take them figuratively. You can take them as it were in a parable. There are at least three levels, and then there's probably another one that comes in dreams and when you're working with the archetypal mind. So I think that they're from elsewhere. I think that we all have a vehicle, a physical vehicle for those of us who have physical bodies, light vehicle for those who are able to move as energy, and I think they probably did it at some point come among us in terms of being thought forms that were just about halfway physical. But whether or not there was any physical shift involved, as we would think of it, I doubt. I doubt very much that there was anything like that. I think that they came by thought, and they're here by thought to serve, hopefully. You know, they're very serious about that.
Well, because, you know, the reason I bring that up is because Carla has five books that are about her raw channelings. Do you like to use the word channelings? Is that okay? Transmission channeling?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. And that they were done in 1981 through 1985. And 1984?
Uh-huh.
Okay, thank you for correcting me. And originally, she was working with a gentleman by the name of Don Elkins, who was very much into UFOs and extraterrestrial contact. And so when the first Ra book came out, it was called Ra, let's see.
Well, we didn't do that. That was done by the people that printed the book, the publisher, the Donning Company. They made that up. Isn't that awful?
They made the title up?
Yeah, well, they didn't make the title up. They made up a subtitle. They thought it would sell better.
An ancient astronaut?
Yeah, I think it was a buzzword at the time.
I see.
We were silly. We let it happen. But it doesn't really matter.
Right. Well, that's why I asked you the question, because, it's a...
Yeah, I'm sorry about that title, guys.
Yeah, but I don't think they're using it now, right? They retitled it.
Oh, really?
Am I correct?
They just,
I think
well,
so.
I don't know. I don't look a lot, you know, at the cover of the book. It's I'm familiar with it. So, you know, they may have taken it off and I didn't notice.
Mm.
It certainly isn't used, that's right.
Mm.
Except by librarians, probably.
Okay, good. I'm glad I solved that for myself. Because I always said, why does she title it this? You know, it seems like a contracted
it's so
way
hokey.
Of, yeah, well, a contracted way of looking at Ra. You know, when you think of Ra, how would you explain your experience of Ra as an energy as opposed to a channel voice? Can you feel an energy? I'm sure you can, but I've never asked you this question.
The only time that I was conscious of channeling Ra was the first time. And it was nice that I had that, because I was able to challenge him quite stiffly, and the Ra group were perfectly able to rise to the challenge. So I felt quite reassured. But actually, the first time that I was aware of an entity that was overshadowing me was years before. An Irish psychic met me for the first time and told me I had a huge golden presence right behind me. And it was just towering over me. And he thought that I would come to know what that was. And that was certainly true. When I first felt that energy, I thought it felt very good. But it was like a laser. It wasn't warm and fuzzy at all. It was like picking up a beam of sunlight or something. That kind of a very focused energy.
I see.
So it was different than anything I'd sensed before, but it met the challenge just fine.
This is when the first time Ra came through.
Yeah.
So you were,
yeah, the
you
first
were...
time he came through, Don was in the circle, and a fellow named Leonard was in the circle. I was teaching Leonard. He was very keen on learning the channel at the time, and he was making good progress. And he came through, Ra came through, and Don immediately thought that this was unusual, and so he began to question him, you know, can we write a book, can we collect these? But the funny thing about that first, I think it was the very first session, was that the water company was trying to fill the cistern. They had not been scheduled to come, but they just calmly ignored all the signs on the doors that said, busy, go away, and bang, 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 bang. It was a zoo. Now, I didn't know anything about it. I didn't hear it because of the nature of the contact, but I'm told it was very humorous. After that, we always put a chain across the driveway.
So no one could get in and disturb you.
Yeah, and pound on the door.
Yeah.
It was funny. I mean, talk about resistance, right? But it didn't seem to bother anything.
How do you think, if you take all your channelings and take them and move them into your own intuitive experience of what it means, how do you think these energies of, I could say, the Ra group, the core group, these energies actually work with us. Ra said they work with us. They said they work with us in this realm. And,
well, I think it's just a connection, like electricity. You make a connection across a space, a potentiated mm-hmm. space. And I think that when you're tuning to channel, you're tuning yourself to a certain vibration. And that vibration mm-hmm. is compatible with sources that, you know, you're saying, okay, who comes in the name of Jesus Christ? Well, somebody mm-hmm. might say, I am so-and-so, and you say, well, can you say that Jesus is Lord? It's pretty cut and dried. I have never known a single entity I didn't trust to be able to pass that challenge. So, you know, it's mm-hmm. a good one, not even just for Christians, but just for people who want a really easy symbol of absolute and unconditional love.
Mm-hmm.
So I pretty well trust that challenging to deliver me to a good source that's compatible with the highest and best tuning that I can carry. So this is basically mm-hmm. the best service I know how to do. And so that's the way I always tune and the way I always challenge.
And bring in their messages.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's what it is. It's a very specific energy exchange.
Mm-hmm.
And they're always talking when they're working with new channeling students about working with the connection. They mm-hmm. want it to be comfortable for the person, yet they want the person to feel secure. And so, and they want to be heard, of course. That's, you know, number one. And a lot of times people are slow at that. So, you know, mm-hmm. they're constantly working to see if they can get a more comfortable connection or a louder connection, you know, volume up.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think it's a connection, not just a blending of energies, although I'm sure that takes place at a personal level between everyone in the group, just like everybody that's listening, you know, all four of us, I hope some people made it on, are actually creating a sacred space by our talking. And that's, mm-hmm. you know, we can reliably count on people being able to hang up the phone in a far better settle than when they got on, because, you know, we're here to talk about love and to talk about how that works, you know. So, on a personal level, I think they are blending, certainly, with everyone in the meditation group to create the sacred circle. But in terms of their service, I believe it's very specific.
See, that's exactly the word I use, blending, because what I feel, I mean, this is my feeling, and you could give your take on this, is that if we talk about them reverently, well, when you and I talk, we start to blend, okay, just because we're engaging
everybody
each other.
Everybody does. I mean,
and,
you know, some people fight
blends,
it.
Yeah. Well, some people maybe are holding their energies in a more rigid formation. So when they're talking, it's like from one mind to another mind, or one emotion to another emotion.
Yeah, I think some people
emotion.
Are very well defended.
Yeah, but I mean, people that are not have let that go. When they start communicating, if they can let that go, the communication will move into a blending.
Mm-hmm, right.
And this is the way I understand it, is that. And from my own questions to my own sources, is that when we blend our energies become visible on the other side of the veil. It's kind of like, and I, of course, I'm on this side, so I can only hypothesize how that might be, but they seem to be able to register that. They, meaning these positive high soul groups, and the negative ones perhaps also, can see the energy of people blending in other realms. And then if you start talking about a group like the Ra group, or in my case, the Elohim group, they can start, it's an invitation to them of our own free will to have them blend with us, and it becomes expansive. Those that are listening can start to feel that energy of the blending, and it starts to change the vibration on this level. Now that's
but it's our vibrations as well, because we respond and then we feed back, and then it just keeps going.
It's all
very legitimate and organic, which is nice. Yeah. It's the kind of high that you might find, say, in blending with nature or blending with any part of the dance.
Mm-hmm. We're in the formula. We're in the blend.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, but I think you're right about the blending. I just think that there's a difference between that energy and the energy of the actual channeling.
Right. When you're channeling, I would think they're giving kind of instructions a little bit or indications. I mean, I've read your channelings out loud, and I can feel energy shift just because I'm reading your channeling out loud. In fact, you know, every Tuesday night, Wayne Smallridge in South Carolina, you know, reads one of your quote channelings.
I wanted to say, Wynn, pardon me for getting off the subject, but I always forget this. We have a gatherings newsletter, and we list the study groups. So we'd be glad to put all your material about when people get together on BBS to study the Confederation material. We'd be glad to put that in the newsletter. If you just get me all the information, we'll do it.
Okay. Well, I wouldn't necessarily say that it's an official study of it, although we do.
That works.
but you know, we've had a conference line. People on my conference line have taken initiative, a number of them. So for a long time, we did have a discussion group on the Law of One. There's a lady in Arizona named Suzanne, who has loved your material, and then she discovered my material, and she saw, you know, even though they're from different points of view, she saw the correlations, very similar cosmologies, and so she conducted a Law of One discussion group for a long time. And then they finally got tired of talking about the Law of One until some new people would come into it. So then they opened up to talk about other things as well. But, of course, the thing about the Law of One is once you actually assimilate it as real, you can't talk about anything without it being part of the Law of One, because the Law of One says it's all one.
It's a big barn.
Big barn, right. So, really, the only thing is are you talking about the Law of One from the point of view of the positive, or from the point
positive
of view of the negative?
Or negative, for sure, that's one thing. But also, you know, Eastern or Western, you know, they tend to give a couple of different examples, you know, depending on the point of view, and it's sort of like, oh, that goes into the part of the Law of One where it talks about polarity. Oh, that goes into the part where it talks about chakras. Oh, that goes into the part where it talks about healing. You know, things tend to be part of a puzzle.
Yes.
And the Law material, or the Law of One sessions with Don Elkins asking the questions and Ra as the responder, you know, has to be the prime conversation in the Western world since Aristotle was alive. Mm-hmm. Because he was so well prepared to ask. He was so well prepared as a physicist. He'd been doing a lot of reading on alternate physics. He'd been studying UFOs since 1955. He was all through the part where you ask, are they real? He was interested only in talking to people who had had an experience with something that came out of the ground. It made marks in the ground. You know, they had a communication, and they went on board. They had a trip. You know, that's the kind of UFOs. That's all he would get in this plane and go to see. And there are cases like that all the time. So, you know, he'd been through all of the preliminary heats, you know, for this particular race. Mm-hmm. And he was ready. So, and I had been practicing channeling at that point since 1974. So I had worked a whole lot, just a really lot, trying to make it better. I got interested and wanted to do an excellent job. And so I began figuring out, okay, that makes for a bad session. Okay, that won't work. You know, so I stopped allowing fear-based questions or specific questions unless the person asking the question said, can you give me some spiritual principles or resources to work on as I look at this problem. And then I'll accept the question. And that's, you know, just a very gradual learning process, because there's really nobody else that's looked at it from the point of view of a researcher at the same time they were doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I thought, well, this is great. I actually wrote a book about it. Mm-hmm. One, a channeling handbook. But,
yeah.
All elements came together to create a really big barn, because, you know, Don asked all the questions. Not all the questions you could possibly ask, but every single one, you go, I wish he'd taken that further. But he sort of covered the terrain of this puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when you read somebody else's work, it tends to be narrower in focus. And so you say, well, it goes into that part of the puzzle, and that really, you know, is very, you know, compatible with what Ross said about that.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure there's people that are listening for the first time tonight that haven't read the raw material and that are trying to pick up on the flow and saying, do I understand what they're talking about? So, for those people that are listening for the first time, I would like to give my take on what Carla had brought forth in her raw material and give her a chance to add or correct whatever I say. Because, well, you know, my thing is to try to take all of this and synthesize it into the most simplest way so that anybody, if they've heard it for the first time or the 100th time, it makes it so, oh, I can understand that, okay? So Carla started channeling a voice that identified itself as Ra in 1981, and Ra was not identifying itself as an individuated single consciousness. Ra was describing himself as a group consciousness. Actually, the word they used was a social memory complex, or a group soul. And that they were composed of individuated souls that had gone through a series of lifetimes in this realm, in the process that is identified as reincarnation, not on this planet, but on other planets, and they said Venus, but maybe even for millennium before that, but the most recently was Venus, and they graduated from lifetimes on Venus, and I forget how many hundreds of thousands of years ago. Carla could fill that in. Pardon me?
Millions.
Millions of years ago.
I think. I'd have to look it up.
And they acted as a helper for planets at lower levels of evolution, in particular Earth. And so Ra has been like use the word oversoul, or an energy that's observing us or helping us or connecting with us interdimensionally from a higher realm, and they're composed of graduates, so they have a lot of wisdom about how this realm operates. Even though they weren't on Earth, they were on other planets where the same principles apply. So they're able to give guidance to us to help us graduate, okay? And one of the ways they give guidance is through a channel like Carla, who has probably put together the most extensive body of information of anyone who channels, of thousands of channelings done under rigorous circumstances to keep the energy pure, which you can read on our website, you know, for free. And you can also listen. We pick one out every Tuesday and we read it. And the experience that I would say I have is that this social memory complex that I call Ra, that identifies itself as Ra, and I say identifies itself because when you're dealing with an energy, what's in a name? It's like the reason they probably used the name Ra with Carla is because that name gives it certain historical antecedents. But I think that there's other people out there that probably channel either subsegments of the Ra group, and they use different names because it gets confusing, because on a human level, we think when you hear a name, we identify it in a, how can I say it, like that's a human, or a human voice. An individuated, but it's not an individuated voice, so they can identify themselves however they want, because their goal is to try to help us, not to figure out, you're Ra, or I'm Ra, it doesn't matter. I noticed that with the Elohim, I feel their energetic frequency coming through certain people, and I hear them use words like the Council of Light or something, and I sense that it's part of the Elohim. But they won't even tell me if I ask them, because they honor the individuation of each person's process. So now that I said all that, tell me if you think I said it okay.
Well, yes and no. I think that you were brilliant, actually, with parts of it and the parts that were at first, you know, before you got off on the other riff. Were especially mm-hmm. brilliant. I think what I'd probably say about that contact is that it's a communication from entities that feel the sorrow of Earth. I think they're a real source, and I think they're a real group of sources. And only reason I say that is the accumulation of philosophy on our archive site. I think it's over 1,600 channeling sessions that I've done over a long period, and you know I couldn't come up with all that stuff. So you know, at this point I'm fairly relaxed about it. I don't have anything to prove to myself, which is comfortable, and it's just a matter of moving into the very best tuning I possibly can and doing the job, as long as people show up for the meetings. If they stop, I'll just catalog my library. You know, it's mm-hmm. no big deal, but it's a nice service to be able to do. I'm not at all convinced that it's better than the service that I do by staying up and cheerful and comforting, and on times, you know, when it costs, where you have to kind of tune up to do that, and we all have those days. I'm not sure what mm-hmm. You know, staying steadily a lighthouse in this world of all kinds of hustle and bustle and drama queens and stuff is just, you know, I think maybe that, in terms of just sheer lighthouse power, that could well, you know, wipe out channeling or any other outer service. I think most of the time, if we're on the beam, our inner service is far more important than our outer service. But
mm-hmm.
I feel a real privilege, you know, to have been able to do this, and I continue to feel a real privilege because of the Kuo groups, you know, containing the Ra group in it, in such a way that, you know, I can handle that energy okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what a blessing. But I think that you did pretty well with it. I think if I were going to say exactly what it was, I would say it was philosophy, in particular cosmology, along with... a few other metaphysical points, but you know, basically, mm-hmm. it's a view of how the world works, not the world, but the universe, the creation,
mm-hmm.
all that there is, how everything works, and
mm-hmm.
that's why it's the whole puzzle, because it is cosmology, and the spiritual or metaphysical aspects that are so dear to our hearts about oneness and unity and love and light and clarity. Those stem directly from the very nature of the way the universe works. So it's very mm-hmm. internally consistent cosmology that creates a beautiful spiritual philosophy, which is simply logical. You know, once you accept the premises of their cosmology, I have found it enormously helpful. You know, I don't feel connected to it, and I don't feel at all that I did it. That would be a joke.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Not on the personal level, you know, I don't even know that stuff.
But I just want to say, oh, no, you could not have done it. Believe me.
Tell me.
No way. I mean, I mean, there's no way a human could do that over how many years that Carla has been doing this and have a consistent cosmology that actually, I mean, if somebody was writing a movie script, it would be almost sound like science fiction. It's so far out. And yet, it's probably the way it is. And in fact, Gene Roddenberry, who did Star Trek, was, you know about that, he was going to a channel, right? Did you know that? Gene was going
to a channel. Well, yeah, and he was friends with Uri Geller, et cetera.
Yeah.
He was healed by Uri Geller once. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.